We good? Okay, all right, we're going to get started. Welcome, everybody. All right. So in this session, we're going to talk about these tax-advantaged investment accounts, is what I refer to them as. And they're not all retirement savings accounts, but five of them are retirement savings accounts. There's actually seven self-directed tax-advantaged investment accounts. Five are retirement savings accounts, and then there are two, what I'll refer to as ancillary accounts, that are for education or health care. We're going to talk through that. Now, for those of you that, and I showed this slide earlier this morning, we're going to go through it very quickly. For those of you that have ever been told by one of those naysayers, for those that were in the morning session, who's like the number one naysayer of self-directed IRA investing in real estate? Financial salesperson. See what we're doing? We're starting a movement in this country. All right. So I also have this slide up there because for those of you that are looking to raise capital, you're looking to potentially partner with other investors, you're looking to take your orbit and partner with someone else's orbit, this is a really good slide for you to have. In fact, if you're interested, I can send this to you. So after this session, just come see us. I can actually get this slide to you. Who is looking to raise money? And when I say raise money, it might just be like partner with an investor. You're looking for money partners, financial friends. Who's looking for financial friends? Okay, so for all intents and purposes, a majority of this room. So it's inevitable that you're going to come across a financial friend or a potential financial partner that is going to be exposed to a naysayer, whether it's family members or a financial salesperson, that says, no, you can't do this, or no, you shouldn't do it, or no, it's not true diversification. So this is a great slide to share with them. Just remember that self-directed IRA is an industry term. One of the number one questions that we get from folks when they fill out our account application, as you'll see on the account application, it says what account you're applying for. And it says traditional IRA, Roth IRA, or SEP IRA. Or it could be a covered education savings account or a health savings account. And what a lot of people will call and ask about is they'll say, well, you sent me the wrong application. And usually my response is, you know, I try to not be sarcastic, but sometimes it's difficult to do that. I say, you know, do you really think I would send you the wrong application? I don't think I would do that. So when you look at the application, it doesn't say self-directed. An IRA is an IRA is an IRA. So an IRA at Fidelity, Schwab, wherever your local bank is, you set up an IRA, that IRA is really no different than the equity trust IRA. The difference is that the equity trust IRA allows you to self-direct into real estate, whereas the Bank of America, the Chase Bank, the Fidelity IRA isn't going to allow you to invest in real estate. It's not because those are bad companies. I'm not saying that. It's that those companies are not geared, they're not tooled, they don't have the personnel to support alternative investments in a self-directed IRA. Okay, you might be able to self-direct into mutual funds or stocks, but in terms of self-directing into real estate, you're not going to be able to do that. Okay, everybody with me on that? So when you're talking with an investor, you're probably going to need to explain this. You're also likely going to need to share with them, which comes directly to the IRS website. If you go to irs.gov and you search in the search box Real Estate IRA FAQ, you're going to be directed to this page. And in black and white, directly from the IRS website, again, irs.gov, you're going to see IRA trustees are permitted to impose additional restrictions on investments. For example, because of administrative burdens, many IRA trustees do not permit IRA owners to invest IRA funds in real estate. IRA law does not prohibit investing in real estate, but trustees are not required to offer real estate as an option. So just remember, it's not a matter of legality, but rather a matter of choice. All right, we can move on from that. These are the seven self-directed tax-advantaged investment accounts for those that want to take pictures or write this down. Now, we're going to go in depth into the traditional IRA, Roth IRA, and solo 401k. I want to make sure that everybody in today's class understands the difference between a self-directed solo 401k and a self-directed IRA. And it's not a competition between the two types of accounts. I have found in the real estate investment industry, unfortunately, there's a lot of folks out there that misconstrue the self-directed IRA versus the self-directed solo 401k. Some people are even told, or they think, that the only way to self-direct into real estate is to do it through a solo 401k. Has anyone heard that before? That happens sometimes. In fact, there's some of these seminar companies out there that have solo 401k administrators, not custodians, that are part of their sales ecosystem, and they will force people into self-directed solo 401ks, even though they're not eligible to do so. And then they come to workshops where you actually learn about how this stuff actually works, and then they learn that they were never qualified or never eligible to even open a solo 401k. So I really want to make sure that everybody in today's class can leave here knowing the pros and cons of the IRA versus the solo 401k so that you can make a good financial decision going forward. All right, then you have two business retirement plans beyond the solo 401k called a SEP IRA or simple IRA. Does anybody have a SEP or simple IRA by any chance? Any SEPs or simples? Okay, great. Self-employed individuals going back to 1978 could have the SEP IRA. So you hear of a lot of self-employed individuals who have SEP IRAs. It's just like a tax-deferred traditional IRA, but it's for a business owner. Now, most business owners, self-employed individuals, I find they utilize the solo 401k, not the SEP IRA. But there are still some benefits associated with the SEP IRA in comparison to the solo 401k. Lastly, there's the Covered L Education Savings Account and Health Savings Account. Not retirement savings accounts, but they are very beneficial for those of you that are looking to save in a tax-free environment for healthcare-related expenses, if you qualify, or for educational expenses. And that's the Covered L Education Savings Account. For those of you that were in the morning session, you saw me put up this slide, the orbit. So what I want you to be thinking about going forward as you begin looking at these different self-directed accounts and selecting the types of accounts that are going to make sense for you, the best way to approach this is to map it out. I'd encourage you to, whether it's on a PowerPoint slide or a spreadsheet or however you want to do it, to create this orbit. All right, and I mentioned in the earlier session that my orbit looks like this. I have my traditional IRA, my Roth IRA. My wife has her traditional IRA and her Roth IRA. And then we have a health savings account. So that's five tax advantage investment accounts. And then for those of you that were in the morning session, you learned that my colleague and longtime business partner with Equity Trust, Kent Kinzer, in the back, we've been doing this for 11 years together. He's going to retire at some point very soon, hopefully sooner rather than later. And so what he doesn't know is I've named myself as the beneficiary to his Roth IRA. And so when he passes away, I now get to add one more planet to my orbit. Exactly. Yep, there you go. So, that was one of those bad jokes again. When you guys fill out your paperwork, we don't name ourselves as beneficiaries to your IRAs. You have access to that online. You're able to view that in real time, okay? So we're not stealing planets from other people. We're adding planets with consent, of course. All right, now we'll talk through examples of how we can partner multiple planets together for the same transaction, whether it's buying a property or it's making a private money loan, which, as we talked about in the earlier session, could be a private money loan or an equity participation loan. So what I want you to think about is, how can I maximize tax advantage dollars? That's what you're going to want to be thinking about. How do I maximize tax advantage dollars? How do I get as much money into all of these accounts that I can, as soon as I can, make my contributions every year? Because we're leveraging compounding interest in the absence of taxation. You probably heard me say that earlier today, or if you watch any of our YouTube videos, you'll hear that phrase, compounding interest in the absence of taxation. It's incredibly powerful. If we eliminate that variable of taxation, we can get to our retirement goals and our financial goals in a shorter period of time. And when people ask me, what do you actually do? What do you help people with? We help people get to their retirement goals and their financial goals in a shorter period of time. The savings vessel for that are these self-directed tax advantage investment accounts. But just like we talked about earlier this morning, the accounts in themselves are great, right? We put money in the account, that's satisfying, we're putting money away, but what do we need to do with that money? We need to make it grow, right? We need to make it in, we need to invest it, right? We got to keep it moving. If it just stays there stagnant, right? Using our universe analogies and metaphors, right? If the universe stays stagnant, what happens? It's going to, right? We're going to create like a black hole. I'm probably messing up the whole theoretical physics thing, but you know, if somebody out there knows, go ahead and yell at me. But it's we need to keep it expanding, right? We want to keep our universe expanding. That's what we're talking about here. All right, so now that you have the map, you can start drawing that out, and then you can share that with Equity Trust. And then we can help you actually establish and fund these self-directed accounts. So let's dive into the traditional and Roth IRA. The traditional and Roth IRA. So you can fund a traditional and Roth IRA if you have existing IRAs, 401ks, other retirement plans. I'll talk about that in just a moment. But what if you want to just simply open up a new account and make a contribution? What if you don't already have an IRA and you're setting one up for the very first time? Whether you already have an account or you don't, I would encourage you, strongly encourage you to contribute to your IRA every single year. And no, that is not so Equity Trust gets more of your money. If you open an IRA somewhere else with another self-directed custodian, or even if you open up an IRA with Fidelity, it doesn't matter. I scream at the top of my lungs from the top of the mountain as much as I can, no matter who the individual is, whether they want to self-direct into real estate or not, to fund their IRA every single year. Because you can only put so much money away every single year. There's only so many tax-free dollars that you can put away every single year. Now, earnings is unlimited. So once you get the seed money in there, in terms of growth, that can be exponential. But how much money you put in there, you're going to be limited by these contribution limits. So what are the contribution limits? For 2022, you can only contribute up to $6,000 per year. Okay? You can only contribute up to $6,000 per year when you're under the age of 50 in the year 2022. In the year 2023, you're going to be able to contribute up to $6,500 when you're under 50. So between now and January 1st, you can make your contribution now, and then you can make another contribution, call it January 1st. When you're under 50, you can get a total of $12,500. When you're 50 and over, they call this a catch-up contribution. So thank you to the federal government, they let you contribute an extra $1,000. Now, there is some legislation, I should mention, that is working its way through the House and Senate, which may allow you to contribute up to $10,000 as a catch-up once you get to a certain age. And that age might be between like 61 and 64. They're still working on that. So when that happens and we know exactly how that law is going to look, we'll make sure we communicate that out to you so that if you do fall into that category of being able to contribute more, then you can start making those higher contributions. So you get to put a little bit more money when you're 50 and over. $14,500 is what you're going to be able to get into the account between now and January 1. Now, let me flip to this spousal contribution. This is really powerful. And I got to thank Marvin up here, who mentioned to me before that, hey, I never knew about this. All right, and I think I've done a disservice by not teaching this more passionately. So I'm going to spend a couple minutes on it. First, you have to understand that IRAs to contribute and 401ks, you have to have earned income. What's earned income? Earned income is income that you're paying taxes on, that is your income taxes, and then also payroll taxes, Medicare and Social Security. In other words, if all you have is passive income from rents, royalties, interest, maybe all you have is a lot of rental properties, you're not claiming any of that income as active earned income, you're not going to be able to contribute to an IRA. You can still invest if you have money in an IRA and grow it, but in terms of making contributions, you're not going to be able to do that. So you got to have some earned income. So if your spouse doesn't have any earned income, a lot of people have thought that, oh, well, they're not going to be able to contribute. your earned income can support their contribution. It's called a spousal IRA contribution. You can go to Publication 590 of the IRS, and you can actually see their spousal contribution. It talks about it. As long as you're married filing jointly, and one of the two individuals has the earned income, then spouse A's earned income can support spouse B's contributions. Which means, so as long as you're making enough and claiming enough income, you can max out your contributions combined here. So the combined for someone under the age of 50 between now and January 1 is $25,000. $25,000 is looking a lot better than $6,000 in terms of putting that money to work for investments, right? When you're 50 and over, $29,000. The reality is most of America is not going to do this between now and January 1. In fact, Americans are only contributing half of what they can. Only 12% of IRAs are taking in contributions on an annual basis. Yes, sir?
So just for clarification, if I'm contributing and I'm doing a spousal contribution as well, then both of us have to have earned income.
So only one, if you're married filing jointly, only one of you has to have earned income. Only one of you has to have earned income. So spouse A's earned income will support spouse B's contribution. All right? Everybody with me on spousal contributions? Yes.
Today, you're in the middle of November. If you don't have anything in these accounts, you open it today, you put your, say you're over 50, you put your $7,000 in, you open your spousal account for your wife, you put $7,000 in, January the 2nd, you do it again, rinse and repeat. That's how you get the $14,500 in there in a matter of about 7 weeks.
That's correct. In a matter of, call it the next 60 days, you're getting this maximum amount in. And then I think where you were going with it next, Marvin, is the next piece of this is contributions to a Roth IRA. If you make too much money, you're going to be told that you don't qualify to contribute to a Roth IRA. These are what are known as modified adjusted gross income limits. You make too much money, you're not going to be able to contribute directly to a Roth IRA. And so that's why you need to look at this backdoor Roth IRA contribution approach. Who's been told that they don't qualify to contribute directly to a Roth IRA? All right, some people here. Some of you, if you don't now, you might not qualify in the future. So all you need to know is if you make too much money, you simply do a backdoor contribution. First, what are these income restrictions? Modified adjusted gross income, just think your adjusted gross income. MAGI is your AGI added back in some of the deductions that you get through your AGI. All right, now we don't need to get into details of that. For a lot of people, their AGI is the same as their MAGI. If you're single and you make over $129,000, you can't do a full contribution to the Roth IRA. If you're married filing jointly and make over $204,000, you can't contribute the full amount to a Roth IRA. All you need to do in this instance is first contribute to a traditional IRA and then immediately convert over to a Roth IRA. It's known as a backdoor contribution. It didn't exist until 2010. The law changed in 2010, which said anyone, no matter how much money you make, you can convert from a traditional IRA over to a Roth IRA. This is known as a Roth conversion. This is what opened up the backdoor contribution. Everybody with me on that? Yes.
John, does it get a little complicated if I already have a traditional IRA and if now I'm past the income limit and I'm trying to do backdoor, where I already have an existing traditional?
Okay, so what's your name again? I'm sorry?
Cara.
Yeah. So Cara is bringing up a good point. When you have existing traditional IRA money and you're working for a company and therefore have a workplace retirement plan, which most do, and you make too much money and you contribute to a traditional IRA, your contribution, you're not going to get a tax deduction for it. Thank you to the Tax Relief Act in 1986. And so if you're interested in history, you can read up on that. It's fascinating history, by the way. So they changed the law in 1986 and said, okay, if you contribute to a traditional IRA and you have a workplace retirement plan like a 401k and you're over a certain income amount, you don't get a tax deduction for your traditional IRA contribution. It's called a non-deductible IRA contribution. It doesn't mean you can't contribute to a traditional IRA. It just means you don't get a deduction for it. It doesn't mean that it doesn't make sense to contribute to a traditional IRA. Again, it's just that you don't get a tax deduction for it. When you eventually pull the money out, you don't have to pay taxes on it, even though it's in a traditional IRA, because the money was after tax going into the account. But you have to do the math on what percentage came from your non-deductible contribution and what percentage came from deductible contributions and earnings. So it gets a little complicated. Therefore, most tax accountants and CPAs just tell people, no, you can't contribute to a traditional IRA. So then they call me and they say, hey, I was told I can't contribute to the traditional IRA. I say, no, you can. It's just you're not going to get a tax deduction for it. So that's another one of those misnomers in the industry. To answer the question where Carla was going with this is, with these non-deductible contributions, when you convert those non-deductible contributions over to a Roth and you have an existing traditional IRA, there's what they call a pro rata rule. So basically, a percentage is going to be taxable and a percentage is not going to be taxable. It doesn't mean you can't do it. It just means from an accounting perspective, you have to go through a little bit different process. I created a video which is going to be launching on YouTube. No, this is not a plug for YouTube. I didn't plant this. It just so happened to work out this way. If you go to YouTube and search Equity Trust Company, just hit the little subscribe button and the bell notification. In the next week and a half, I have a video. It's a 20-minute training that is all on exactly what we were just talking about here. So if you're confused, you in the future have this situation, you can check out that video and we can walk you through it. Alrighty, so these are contributions to traditional and Roth IRAs. Important to know that you can't contribute to the traditional up to the full amount and then also the Roth. You got to pick between the two, or combined, you can't exceed the $6,000 or $7,000 if you're over 50, and then $6,500 and $7,500. Okay? Alrighty, funding a self-directed IRA. This is, I'll consider this the easy part, because we're handling a lot of this for you at Equity Trust. Don't feel like you have to figure out how to roll over your money or transfer your money or make a contribution. We're going to handhold you through the process. That's why I'm here. That's why Kent's here. That's why May is here at the exhibitor table. We can help you through this process over the phone. We can make the necessary phone calls and transition your money from point A to point B. There's four funding methods to these accounts. The first is a rollover from a 401k, 403b, profit sharing plan, TSP. For those that are federal government employees, they don't get 401ks, they get thrift savings plans. So the natural progression is when you leave that employer or retire or reach the age of 59 and a half, you do a rollover. They call this a rollover, a direct rollover. You take the money and you move it directly into the self-directed IRA. Now, you make sure that you work with us because we initiate a direct rollover, and that money is a direct rollover into the self-directed IRA so that there's no taxes or penalties. One of the most common misconceptions is when I move money from an IRA or 401k to a self-directed IRA, there's going to be some tax penalties or consequences. Who do you think a lot of times will tell people that there are tax consequences and penalties to move it from one account to a self-directed IRA? Right, a financial salesperson. I think someone said it. Financial salesperson. Okay, so rollover. If you're already, if you're still currently employed by the employer that offers the 401k or other type of retirement plan, do you think you're going to be able to roll the money over into a self-directed IRA? Probably not. There are some instances, particularly when you're 59 and a half or older, that you actually can do what's called an in-service withdrawal. Write that down, in-service withdrawal. That means while you're still working, you can roll the money over into an IRA. So you can unlock that money from its financial prison, and you can actually move it over into the self-directed IRA to deploy it for your real estate transactions. In-service withdrawal. In-service withdrawal, not to be confused with the distribution, therefore taxes and penalties. You're doing an in-service withdrawal where you're rolling the money over directly into the self-directed IRA. No taxes or penalties. All right, IRA transfer. This one's simple. If you have an existing IRA, you can just transfer the money into the self-directed IRA. We do that for you. So we send a form over to your current IRA company and they send the money back by check or direct deposit or wire transfer. We work with hundreds of financial institutions across the country in terms of getting money moved from point A to point B, so don't feel like you have to be an expert here. That's where we will step in and help you through the process. Or if you have a private money lender or private money investor that you're working with, you connect them with us, and we will take them by the hand and walk them through that process. That's why we have over 400 associates. That's why we've been doing this for the last 40 plus years. We have a lot of experience with this. So lean on us. Don't feel like you have to have all the tools and resources. Contributions. I showed you traditional and Roth contributions. I'll show you contributions to the other accounts in just a second. And then last but not least, a Roth conversion. So going back to that back door, that's what the back door is. It's just converting from a traditional to a Roth. But what if you have lots of tax-deferred money now in a 401k or 403b? You first roll that over to a traditional IRA, and then you can convert the entire account or just a portion to the Roth IRA. So let me pause there for a moment to give you some tips. When you convert money from a tax-deferred account to a Roth account, whatever amount you convert is added to your ordinary income, and then you have to pay taxes. You don't pay a penalty, but you do have to pay taxes because you're going from tax-deferred to tax-free. I mentioned Kevin and Cynthia in the morning presentation. They had about $200,000 in traditional IRA money. They converted it to Roths. The $200,000 converting to a Roth, they paid about $75,000 in taxes. That's a big tax bill. But guess what? They grew those Roth IRAs to over $1 million in properties in cash. And they're generating $130,000 in net tax-free cash flow on an annual basis. If we ran the numbers and they took distributions from that account over, let's say, a 10-year period, they'd be paying well over $200,000 in taxes. So they paid $75,000 in taxes in 2010 so that they never have to pay taxes on that money ever again. The theory is pay taxes on the smaller seed so we don't have to pay it on the much larger crop. Now, that may not work for everybody, okay? Not everybody in this room should convert from a traditional to a Roth. Some people might be better off just keeping it in a traditional IRA and keeping it growing tax deferred. But if you think you're going to put a lot of effort behind growing this account and you're going to grow it in a very significant way, that is the Roth IRA, you might be better off converting it now so that you don't have to pay taxes later. You can convert in stages. Here's an important tip. You can convert in stages. So convert a little bit of money now, and then convert up more money at the turn of the year. So over the next 60 days, you got your contributions we talked about, you max out. You can convert a sum of money now into the Roth and take care of that in tax year 2022, and then convert a little bit more over in 2023, thus spreading your tax burden out over 2 years. And guess what? January 1, when you convert a little bit more money over, you don't have to pay the tax bill until when? April 15th of 2024, right? So you got, call it 15 months to pay the tax bill. You don't have to withhold money from the account to pay for the taxes. In fact, most people don't, because they cherish the tax-free Roth dollars, so they want to keep as many tax-free Roth dollars in there as they can and keep them growing.
Same thing on fees. Fees paid personally to keep that Roth account money in.
Yep.
It's hard to put the money in.
Marvin brings up a good point. So Marvin prefers to put his credit card on file with Equity Trust to pay his annual maintenance fees. That way he gets the credit card points, and he gets the benefit of the tax-free savings in the Roth IRA. So he doesn't want to erode those Roth IRA dollars. Great point. Okay, so now moving on to the Coverdell Education Savings Account and HSA. Oh, one more item, let me back up a moment on the Roth conversion. Partial conversions, converting in stages. So to give an example, I have a client, Alan from Texas. He had about $500,000 in a 403B. He was a college professor. He rolled over that 403B into what type of account?
Traditional.
A traditional IRA. Self-directed traditional IRA. That $500,000, he took about $100,000 of that and bought a rental property. This was back in 2011-ish. Bought a rental property, with that traditional IRA. That rental property was generating rental income going back into the traditional IRA, and it was growing tax deferred. Deal number two, the following year, he catches on to this concept of a Roth IRA. Alan's story is he wants to leave the IRAs to his children or grandchildren. He's not interested in using much of the money himself. So he said, why don't I start paying taxes on this money? So first deal he did with his Roth, he converted about $75,000 from his traditional to his Roth. He paid taxes on that $75,000. He bought a rental property for $65,000, put $10,000 worth of renovations into it. He's renting it out for about $1,200 a month. The $1,200 a month is going back into the Roth IRA tax-free. Year number three, he converted more money over to buy a third property. Then year four, he converted more money over and bought a fourth property. So now he has four rental properties, one in his traditional IRA still, and then three in his Roth IRA. The three in his Roth IRA are generating about $33,000 in tax-free cash flow on an annual basis. He's also recognized between $30,000 to $40,000 in appreciation on those properties in his Roth IRA. So when he eventually sells those properties, there's no long-term capital gains tax and there's no recaptured appreciation because they're all in his Roth IRA. So that's another way you can think about it in terms of converting from traditional to Roth, is convert it based on the types of investments that you're doing and the timing of those investments. For those that are, is anyone doing wholesaling or real estate options, some smaller dollar investments? If you know you're going to make, let's say, a $6,000 assignment fee on an option or a wholesale transaction, maybe you convert $500 from the traditional to the Roth, pay taxes on the $500, so you're not paying it on the $5,000. So you can look at it from that perspective as well. Alrighty, Coverdell Education, yes?
Okay, just a quick question. You just said he's buying real estate with his IRA. I thought you couldn't do that.
No, okay.
Or I thought you couldn't buy your own real estate. You could only, like, loan other people.
Okay, so you can't buy your own personal properties or properties you own now, investment properties you own now. So it would be new real estate that you'd be buying.
Yeah. I can't go buy new real estate.
Absolutely. Your self-directed IRA, I'll show you some examples. Self-directed IRA can own property. Properties are sold, profits go back in. Your IRA can also be a private money lender, so you can loan money secured by real estate. Absolutely. Your IRA can invest in partnerships. Your IRA can buy gold and silver. Your IRA can invest in all sorts of non-stock market investments. Absolutely. All right, Coverdell Education Savings Account. The Coverdell Education Savings Account can be set up for any child under the age of 18. They have to be under the age of 18. You can put in $2,000 per year. That contribution is after tax. After tax. Think of it like a Roth IRA. It grows tax-free, and then you can use it for K-12 education as well as college tuition. Let me repeat that. K-12 education and college tuition. So you don't have to wait till they're in college. Grows tax-free. I have a client that he buys and sells land. So he buys land, and then he sells the land to developers and builders. He bought a piece of land in outside of Nashville, Tennessee for $8,000. He partnered up his three children's Coverdell Education Savings Accounts. Coverdell number one put in $4,000. Coverdell number two put in $2,000. Coverdell number three put in $2,000. So it was four, two, and two. So Coverdell number one owned 50%. Coverdell two had 25%. Coverdell three had 25%. They sold the property for $60,000 to a developer. They made approximately $50,000 in net profit. That net profit was split 50% into Coverdell 1, 25% into Coverdell 2, 25% into Coverdell 3. So you can partner multiple Coverdells together. I have another client that does private money loans, and he does anywhere between 100 to 110 of these loans on an annual basis across all of his planets. He has something like 30 some planets in his orbit. He's got 20 Coverdell Education Savings Accounts for his grandchildren, 20 grandchildren. And he'll partner up every single one of these Coverdell accounts on one individual private money loan, all with a different ownership interest, all with profits flowing back proportionally. Health savings account. So if you have a high deductible health care plan, have to have a high deductible health care plan in order to make contributions to an HSA. Does anyone have a health savings account now? Oh wow, quite a few folks. Who knew that you could self-direct an HSA? Okay, good. So you can self-direct an HSA into real estate, private money loans, just like any other account type. It all works the same. A health savings account, a lot of people like to say you get triple the tax benefits. So with an HSA, when you make contributions, so as long as you're eligible, you get a tax deduction. It grows tax-free, and then when you take the money out and use it for healthcare-related expenses, it's tax-free. So hence the triple the tax benefits. Yes?
What is considered high deductible?
What's considered high deductible? So it varies, and it can vary from year to year. If you have a high deductible health care plan, you would know you have one. It would clearly indicate HDHP. And then when you have a high deductible health care plan, the policy makers, the insurance companies, they will sell you, if you will, on opening an HSA. So you would know if you have a high deductible health care plan. Your premiums obviously are going to be lower. Your deductible is going to be much higher. And the IRS sets specific limits on that on an annual basis. And those vary from year to year. Those generally go up year to year. Yes, ma'am?
We have one that's bringing our company that's at $2,000. So since we're both
So your HSA existing, you could actually transfer that over to your equity trust self-directed HSA, and then providing you are still covered under a high deductible healthcare plan, you can then do your maximum contributions for that year. And as it shows here, if it's a family plan, you can contribute up to $7,300, and then when you're 55 and over, they give you a catch-up of $1,000, just like the IRA, and you can contribute up to $8,300. If you're under a single policy, so it's just you, then it's $3,650 when you're under 55, and then 55 and over, it's $4,650. All right, so that's the maximum you can contribute. Now, if you make an investment and you grow it far in excess of that contribution limit, that's fine, just like an IRA. It's just you're bound to these contribution limits in terms of how much money you take out of pocket and contribute to the plan. Okay, yes?
For the CISA, can you have more than one contributor? Like if I set it up for my niece, could I have my brother-in-law still contribute to it as well, or is it just for the single person?
Yeah, so the question is, can you have multiple people contributing to a covered L education savings account? The answer is yes. You can have multiple people contributing to the covered L account. You just can't exceed $2,000. Now, back to the example I gave you before of the land purchase. So the oldest child got a lion's share of that transaction. Coverdell Education Savings accounts can be transferred to other family members. The tax code is pretty broad in the sense that it can even be transferred to a cousin. Or if a child has a Coverdell and they don't use all the money, and then they have a child of their own before the age of 30, they can pass it down to that child tax-free, and then they continue to grow. The reason why it's 30 is the Coverdell has to be used in totality by the age of 30. If it's not used by the age of 30, the entire account becomes distributed, and then taxes and penalties would occur. But you don't lose it all. You just have to pay taxes like you would have otherwise. All right, so that wraps up the HSA and CISA. I'm going to move on to the solo 401k. I know there's probably a lot of other questions. I'll be here all weekend, so happy to answer as many questions you have. But I want to make sure we get into the solo 401k and go through just a couple investment examples. All right, so solo 401k. The first thing that you need to know is there are two eligibility requirements to have a self-directed solo 401k. All right, write these down. Eligibility requirement number one is you have to have earned income. This going back to our earned income. What's earned income? Income that you're paying income taxes on, and what else? Medicare and Social Security, payroll taxes. All right, you have to have earned income. And it has to be earned income in the business that is going to support the solo 401k. So if you have an LLC or an S Corp for your real estate investing, and that LLC or S Corp is not paying you any income, and you're not paying payroll taxes on it, you're not going to be able to open a solo 401k. But guess what? When you go to certain seminars, They'll say, oh, don't worry about it. Just open up the solo 401k. You're going to write me a check for $3,000, okay? Here's your solo 401k, right? Total disregard for eligibility requirements. By the way, this is on the IRS website, irs.gov. It clearly states that in order to be eligible to have a self-directed solo 401k, you have to make recurring and substantial contributions. If you don't have any earned income, you can't meet that facts and circumstances requirement. That's the biggest problem that I see in the industry. People open these things and they're not eligible to have them. Therefore, you can't take advantage of all the benefits. So that's eligibility requirement number one. Number two is you cannot have any employees with the exception of a spouse. The exception of a spouse. Your spouse is working for your business, that's fine. They can also open up a participant account under that solo 401k and max out their contributions. But your spouse would have to be working and you'd have to be paying them a salary or a wage and they are paying taxes on it. Okay, that's the only exception to that rule. Now you gotta be careful because I know what a lot of investors are thinking already. What's going on in your head is, oh, well, I have my property management business over here and I have employees, so I can't open up a 401k there because then I'd have to offer the benefit to the employees. So I'm just gonna set up this separate LLC over here or S Corp and I'm gonna open up my solo 401k here. You guys see where I'm going with this? Do you think the Department of Labor and IRS has caught on to that trick?
Yeah.
Yeah, a long time ago. They figured it out before anyone even tried it. Okay? They're not going to let you do it. Why? Because those separate businesses are going to be considered in what's called a controlled group. A controlled group. Another thing that a lot of people don't talk about. It's write me a check for $3,000 and I'll set up your solo 401k. We do it a little differently because we can offer both a self-directed IRA and a self-directed solo 401k. It's not a one or the other. Where a lot of firms, they can only offer one or the other. We also do it because we have a high degree of integrity. We have a number of regulators that oversee our operation. Number one, the South Dakota Division of Banking. They come in and perform routine audits. If we were opening solo 401ks for people that are not eligible, that would likely be a big problem for us. All right, so those are the two eligibility requirements that you need to have. So how much can you contribute and how does this account type work? I'll pause for a moment and mention, because it's a very common question, you can have a self-directed 401k and max out the contributions, and you can have a self-directed IRA and max out the contributions. That's a common question. I'm working for a company and I have a 401k and I'm maxing it out. Does that mean I can't contribute to my IRA? No, you can still contribute to your IRA. It might be a non-deductible IRA contribution and then you convert it to a Roth, but you can still do it. So they're mutually exclusive. The self-directed solo 401k, think of it as you have two buckets. You have a traditional bucket and you have a Roth bucket. Tax deferred bucket and Roth bucket. Tax deferred bucket, you put money in, you get a deduction. Roth bucket, you put money in after tax, you don't get a deduction, it grows tax free. So how much can you contribute? With a solo 401k, just remember that you are wearing two hats. You're wearing an employee hat and you're wearing an employer hat. So let's put the employee hat on first. As an employee, you can contribute, this is for 2022, these amounts will go up in 2023, by the way. For 2022, if you are under the age of 50, you can contribute up to $20,500. When you're 50 and over, you can contribute up to $27,000. Then we flip over to putting on our employer hat. As an employer, we can take our total income and we can defer up to 25% if we're filing as W-2, 20% if we're filing as a Schedule SE, self-employment. I'll give you an example in just a second here. The combined between employee and employer deferral, think of it like a profit-sharing plan, is $61,000 when we're under 50, $67,500 when we're 50 and over. All right, $61,000 when we're under 50, $67,500 when we're 50 and over. So as you can see here, with a solo 401k, if you're making enough, if you're paying taxes on enough money, you can get a lot more money into a solo 401k than an IRA from a contribution perspective. Again, when we talk about earnings, if you have the ability to grow an IRA substantially, by seeding it and then being creative with real estate joint ventures and equity participation loans and other investments, maybe you don't need this solo 401k because you can grow the account organically. But for those of you that qualify, you're business owners, you have a substantial amount of income, a solo 401k can be a great fit for you. So let me give you an example. We have a hypothetical. His name is John. He's the sole owner of XYZ LLC. And let's say XYZ LLC is in the business of, let's say, flipping a lot of houses. And John doesn't have any employees. John generates $150,000 in Schedule C income. And then he has $50,000 in expenses. And so his net amount is $100,000. $100,000 passes through to his Schedule SE, which stands for self-employment. So $100,000 net. He pays Medicare and Social Security tax on $100,000, right? That's the price to pay to get in the game. And now we go over and we're going to apply our contributions. So let's assume that John, like a lot of us, are incredibly passionate about the Roth IRA and after-tax savings. So John says, hey, I'm going to take my full employee contribution and I'm going to put it into my Roth bucket. Because my employee contribution can go either into the traditional or it can go into the Roth. So I can either get a deduction or I can say I don't want a deduction, I want it to go tax-free. So John says, hey, I'm going to put the full $27,000 into the Roth. Then he does his employer deferral, which is 20% of $100,000, which is $20,000. The $20,000 employer deferral has to go into the tax-deductible bucket, the tax-deferred bucket. Why is that? It's because the business gets a tax deduction for it. It's the same reason why when you work for a company and they give you a 401k, they'll match you up to a certain amount. They're doing it because they're getting a tax deduction for it, not because they love you as an employee. All right, so now here's what's really neat. You can do what's called an in-plan conversion. So you take your tax deductible and you just immediately convert it over to your Roth bucket. So now, using this example, paying yourself $100,000, you now have created $47,000 in tax-free Roth dollars in this solo 401k. So how much can we contribute to a Roth IRA? $6,000 if we're under 50, $7,000 to 50 and over. What I'm sharing with you is if you meet the eligibility requirements, those two eligibility requirements, you could potentially get a substantially larger amount into a Roth environment and still have your Roth IRA and still have that growing. All right, so those are the account types. Let me, for the remainder of the time, we only have about 10 minutes left, I'm going to go through a couple investment examples. Some of these, those of you that came to the morning session saw these. For those that didn't, I want to make sure you understand a little bit about how you can actually use these monies in these accounts to invest. All right, the strategies that we talked about this morning, we talked about three strategies, and I'm just going to share with you a couple examples on the first two strategies. The first is partnering with other investors, including ourselves, and the second is private money lending with ourselves or other investors. All right, so let me give you an example. I bought a property in March of 2020 for $63,000. It's a property right outside of Cleveland, Ohio, in Maple Heights. At the time of buying this property, I did not have enough money in my Roth IRA to support the entire purchase of $63,000. You'll find that a lot of investors don't go out and buy real estate with mortgages with their IRA funds. So in this transaction, it was an all-cash purchase. There's an upper and lower unit. Tenants were paying $750 per month. We bought it from a distressed landlord. There was deferred maintenance. The tenants were struggling to pay rent. So we had tenant issues and we had a lot of deferred maintenance. It was a great opportunity to buy the property, stabilize it, take care of the deferred maintenance, and then sell it for a profit. That was what our plan was. It took us 2 years to do that. So our Roth IRA at the time of purchasing this property put in 55%. Our traditional put in 35%. And then personally, I put in 10%. So I had 55 Roth, 35 traditional, 10% non-IRA money. We bought it for $63,000. We put about $15,000 worth of work into it over 2 years. We got it tenanted, cash flowing, $750 per unit, $1,500 gross per month, net operating income at about $1,200. And then we sold it in May of 2022 for $115,000. All along the way, all profits and all expenses flowed 55, 35, and 10%. So what's important for everybody to understand here is you have to make sure you play by the rules. There are what are called disqualified persons to our IRA. Disqualified persons would include anyone up and down the family tree. Parents, children, grandparents, grandchildren. Those are disqualified persons. We're a disqualified person to our IRA, our spouses, any businesses that we own and operate. Disqualified persons. So when we're partnering with disqualified persons like I am here, I have to make sure that all profits and all expenses flow proportionally. Our traditional and Roth, my traditional and Roth, made $35,000. We paid 0% tax on that $35,000 in profit, that capital gain. Had we done this investment outside of our IRA, we would have had to pay long-term capital gains tax. At a 15% rate, we would have paid $5,000 in taxes. Instead, we did this with our self-directed IRA, Roth, and traditional, and we saved $5,000 in taxes. All right, that's the whole compounding interest in the absence of taxation. All right, now, what if we partner with a non-disqualified person? If we partner with a non-disqualified person, we can carve up the percentages any way that we potentially can. So, I am going to, I mentioned, well, in the advertisement for the session, we mentioned this transaction handbook. Everybody's going to get a copy of this, all right? I'm going to share with you in a second how you get a copy of this. So in this transaction handbook, we have a joint venture agreement. We have a joint venture agreement, which is exactly what Scott and Kate used for this transaction. So here's how the transaction occurred. Scott came to me. He only had about $24,000 in his Roth IRA. He had a property, he had a deal, and he needed $224,000 for it. So there's a problem here, right? He's got a major gap. So he comes to me and he says, hey, John, can I put $24,000 into this deal, and then I personally put in $200,000, and I take 50% of the profits? Do you think the IRS is going to be okay with that? No, because he's a disqualified person. So I said, Scott, do you have a money partner? Do you have a money partner? And he says, well, no, let me call you back. So he goes to his local real estate investor association meeting, and he runs into Kate. And Kate had a Roth IRA and an HSA with $200,000. So Scott partnered his orbit with Kate. They put together this real estate joint venture. It's a four-page joint venture agreement in this book that everybody will get a copy of. And they split the profits 30-70. So 70% of the profits are to go back to Scott's Roth IRA, and 30% are to go back to Kate's Roth and HSA. They made a $60,000 profit. $42,000 of the profit went back to Scott's Roth IRA tax-free. So Scott grew his Roth IRA from $24,000 to over $66,000 on one transaction tax-free. And then Kate made $18,000 tax-free. So a 70-30 split. Now, how is Scott able to negotiate this? Scott's the one who found the investment, right? Even though he put a disproportionate amount in the deal, he's the one who found the investment, he was overseeing the transaction. Kate was the passive money partner. Do you have to do this with $24,000? No. Maybe you only have a $6,000 contribution, or maybe you do your $6,000 now, $6,500 at the turn of the year, right? Now you got $12,500. You put $12,500 into a JV deal like this with a money partner, maybe you have two money partners in the transaction. So everybody will get a copy of this master transaction handbook. So if you want to do an investment like this and create a lot of tax-free horsepower and leverage compounding interest in the absence of taxation, you'll have the documentation to do so. You can also partner on private money loans. So I have been a private money lender for the last 10 years. Using my self-directed accounts, and I have over the years partnered multiple accounts together to make private money loans. Here's just four examples to share with you. This loan that I made on a property, These are all short-term loans to rehabbers, people that are buying, fixing, selling. So my money's going out, my money's coming back in. Money's going out, money's coming back in. Charged 14% annum on this one. I partnered up my traditional at 48% and my Roth at 52%. This was a 50-50 deal. This one was a 48-52. This one was a 50-50. I try to get as much of my Roth money in these investments as I can. All right, that's why I had 52-48 there. Now, I could partner up with my spouse's IRA. So if I don't have enough in my IRA, maybe I'll partner up with my spouse's IRA. That rental property that I shared with you before, I had one regret. I mentioned it to the group earlier this morning. What was my one regret on that deal? I didn't use my wife's IRA. So remember I had 10% in the deal? I'm going to pay taxes on that 10%. Now the other $35,000 in profit, that went back into my IRAs tax-free, right? I'm happy about that. The one regret I have on that deal is I should have brought in my wife's Roth IRA as the 10% investor, and I didn't do it. So that was my one mistake. I was just moving so fast on the deal, I didn't even think bringing her IRA in. You know, and I do this professionally. Every single weekend I'm out speaking about it. So this is where you guys got to grab me and hit me in the head over the head with a 2x4 and say, John, what are you doing? Yes, sir.
Now, in that scenario, if you had done those three IRAs for that property or rental, you'd have to pay every expense proportionally for the three IRAs.
That's correct.
Make that easy?
Yeah, so there's a number of mechanisms you can use to accommodate and make that easy. So I have some training specifically on, if you're going to partner up on investments like this, how to make your life easy and how to not have to put a bunch of brain power into it from a technology perspective, and I could certainly share that with folks, and how to disperse funds and how to get monies back into the account. There's different tools that you can use. So those are just straight private money loans. Lastly, I'll end on this example, and then we'll wrap up on next steps for everybody. So this is an equity participation loan. So what a lot of people aren't familiar with self-directed IRAs, is not only could you make a loan and charge interest, but you could also make a loan and get an equity percentage of the profits. This is known as an equity participation loan. Some people call it a participatory note. Some people call it a shared appreciation loan. An equity participation loan. So Wayne and Alicia loaned $106,000 to a rehabber. Full purchase and rehab is what they loaned on. So the borrower, the rehabber, actually didn't have any money in the deal. They partnered their Roth IRAs 75-25. The property was bought and sold. The rehabber made $114,000 in profit. Per the promissory note, Wayne and Alicia's Roth IRAs were to receive 33% of the share of the profits. So $114,000 times 33% is $37,620 in profit. So $37,620 was split 25% Alicia's Roth IRA and 75% Wayne's Roth IRA. So there you can see the lender on the promissory note and mortgage was Equity Trust Company Custodian FBO Wayne's IRA undivided interest 75% and Equity Trust Company Custodian FBO Alicia's IRA undivided interest 25%. So it was a 75-25% split. That's again what is known as an equity participation loan. All right, so that equity participation loan document, by the way, is in this transaction handbook that everybody's getting a copy of. This is our gift to you for coming to this session, okay? For those of you that didn't get this in the morning session, so I know that there were some folks that were in the morning session. If you didn't get this in the morning session, here's what I want you to do. In the folders that you got. Everybody should have a folder. Those that were in the morning session already had one. I want you to open up the folder, and in the front left pocket, there is an account application. Now, some of you might be opening an account this weekend. Some of you may not be opening an account. Either way, I want you to put your name, phone, and email, unless you already did it in the morning session. I want you to put your name, phone, and email in section one. So you do have to flip the page, section one. You're just going to put your name, phone, and email. Okay? Name, phone, and email. If you are someone that wants to open up an IRA or a Coverdell or an HSA, I just want you to write in the top, open an account. That's all you got to put. Open an account. And we will connect with you this weekend to help you with that process. It only takes about 5 minutes if you stop by our booth. And myself and my colleague, Nay Zippel, who is out there as well, and Kent, will help you through that process. If you just want the handbook, make sure you fill this out, and I'm going to ask you to hand it back in just a second, and Kent is going to walk around and pick it up. That way we can email to you a copy of this transaction handbook. Copies of my promissory notes and mortgages are in here, the equity participation loans, the joint venture agreements. I'll also mention that book, generally that is within our self-directed IRA mastery course, which is $997. We're not charging you for that. You're not going to be upsold on anything. All right, we're giving that to you free of charge for being here today. So on the application, if you're interested in opening an account, again, put open an account. I'll say lastly, if you are somebody that wants to open an account, this makes sense to you, you want to get started, regardless of the account type you're looking to open, what we are doing this weekend as a special gift to everybody is that when you open an account, you'll have no $50 setup fee, and we have a maintenance fee that we charge, and you would pay a fee between now and the end of the year and next year. But instead, what we're going to do is we're waiving the setup fee and we're waiving your 2022 fee. So all you will pay is a 2023 fee. You'll be locked in at the rate based on the amount of money you're moving over initially. You won't have another fee come due until January of 2024. Depending on how much money you're moving over into your account, that could be anywhere between 100 to possibly, if you're moving over a large amount of money, a large balance, it could be upwards of $800 to $1,000 in savings. So what you want to do, again, is put open an account on there. You'll get a text message from us. Okay, you can stop by the booth at any time today or tomorrow. We'll zip you through a digital application. We do not want you putting social security numbers or date of birth on paper. Security is of the utmost importance. So just put your name, phone, and email. Stop by the booth. We'll help you open your account. That doesn't mean that you're funding the account this weekend. What we're doing is just getting your account open so that we can connect with you this week and help you with your rollover, help you with your transfer, help you with a contribution, and walk you through that process. Okay, so can everybody hand in the application that hasn't already? And Kent is going to be... Okay, why don't we do this? We'll just stop, and then when we walk out, just make sure you hand your application to Kent, okay? So with that said, we don't have any more time for questions, but I will be by the booth to answer any questions. I'll hang out here as long as I need to. Hope everybody got a ton out of this session. Thank you so much. Have a wonderful day. Thank you.